This is the Limbit Opik Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back, one and all, to the Limbit Opik Show here at today's News Talk, TNT. 4 hours of news and comment on a Saturday and on a Sunday. 10 till 2 UK time. That's 9 till 1 Greenwich Mean Time on a Saturday. 10 till 2 Greenwich Mean Time on a Sunday. Even if you just step in for a short while, do get involved in the chat at tntradio.live. And you can find the phone numbers there as well. Coming up in this hour, we have probably the most dangerous man I've had on the show for a long time, Matt Towner, who is an adrenaline junkie. We have more in common than he knows. I'll be sharing that with him in a minute. But also, I think you'll find his view of life fascinating and probably refreshing as well. This isn't a man who is risk averse. This isn't a man who's probably going to follow all of the restrictions. And I suspect he probably would be opposed to the mandatory crash helmet law in the United Kingdom for motorbikes too. All of that in a short while. Before we go to that, I want to send my best wishes to a man called Rage Omar. Now, if you don't live in the UK, even if you do, you might not know who that is. He's an ITV host. He was on television and he got caught ill. He became unwell while he was broadcasting. Live on air. I send him my best wishes. Why? Because it happened to me a few weeks ago. If you were watching, and Holly certainly was, I suddenly became unwell and I didn't know why. I went out for a little recuperation, opened the door and everything was fine. It turns out that probably there was some toxic gas in the air in my studio. It was basically because the studio hadn't been used for a while and I think the air had become stagnant. So, In my case, I was fine in 8 minutes. I just opened the door and it was okay. So I was lucky. But this chap, Rage Omar, he wasn't well for a long time. And a spokesperson said, "We are aware that viewers were concerned about Rage Omar's well-being." An ITV news spokesperson said, "Rage became unwell while presenting news at 10 on Friday. Has now receiving medical care. He thanks everyone for their well wishes." I had a lucky escape, folks, because it was just something in the air. But Rage, it seems to have been a little bit worse. So best wishes to him. And I only say that as one professional to another. The other story is this one. British man injured in Tobago shark attack. Well, it makes it seem that sharks are attacking humans right, left and center. The reason it's a story is because it hardly ever happens. Poor shark. Why don't we have all the people who've been electrocuted every year on television? You'd get loads of people then. This British man has been seriously injured after being attacked by a shark on the Caribbean island of Tobago. The 64-year-old is receiving critical care after serious injuries on his left arm, left leg and stomach. Well, okay, that's serious for him, but it's a very rare thing. Here's an interesting statistic, and you'll see the relevance in just a minute. Apparently, shark attacks go up when more people buy ice cream. There's a statistical relationship in the selling of ice cream at a particular locality and shark attacks. Why? Well, the reason is because in hot weather, people buy more ice cream and they go swimming more. It's not the ice cream. But that's the kind of statistical nonsense which is used by the green movement to try to claim all kinds of things. But they get into a mess because they don't do it very well. The lesson here is be careful about statistics. Rather than just taking everything on trust, and you get these surveys day in, day out on the old media, judge for yourself. Use something which doesn't seem to get taught very much in modern day living, common sense. Work out if ice creams can directly cause shark attacks or not. Or ask yourself, is there another agenda? That was a fairly harmless example. But I do have to say that the obsession with shark attacks, number one, gives a bad rap for sharks. And number two, is a little bit, I don't know, a little bit James Bond-like. So I wish this gentleman well. Mr. Augustine says that the man, he's one of the health professionals, so the man had been in Tobago with his wife and friends. Well, it probably ruined his holiday, but hopefully it hasn't ruined his life. But let's just take this lesson. Let's be clear that statistics can be abused. Shark attacks almost never happen. And as far as I'm concerned, human-generated climate crisis never happens. Certainly hasn't happened yet. Any statistics you hear about that, ask, ask, and ask again. If you're in doubt, put them into the chat. I'll tell you what I think. I'm reasonably qualified. I've been interested in the subject for over 40 years now, hoping to do a postgraduate course in it as well, if I ever get the time. But I promise you, when I use statistics, I've always looked into them, or I tell you I haven't had a chance to do so as well. So let's be calm. And it's about actuarial risk. What is that? Well, that's something that my next guest knows all about, because he likes risk, but probably understands it too. This is the Lemmetopic Show. This is TNT. See you in a minute.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Matt Towner, you're probably the most dangerous person I've had on the show. How are you?
Thank you. That's an introduction I haven't had for a while. Thank you very much. And coming from yourself, I take it definitely as a compliment. I've researched some of your daring efforts, my friend, over many years.
You know about the paragliding accident then?
No, I don't know that one. I just saw the wrestling stand-up comedian, which, again, both of those are very dangerous pursuits.
And a pop star called the Cheeky Girl as well. That was risk.
That's right.
And then half of a Romanian pop duo. Oh, you knew about it. You just fell short of mentioning. It's all right. I always know what people are thinking when it comes to that.
They've lived similar lives, I think.
Yeah, but I never set out to do these things just because they were risky. The one that you don't know about was in 1998, 13th of April, as it was, I was paragliding and I fell about 30 meters vertically, literally vertically. I probably stalled the canopy. It was probably my own fault. Anyway, the effect of it was I broke 12 vertebrae, walked off the mountain. And also, I've been riding motorbikes since I was 15, which we have in common.
Yes,
so there's definitely a whole lot of stuff there that you may not know, but I think my risk taking pales into insignificance compared to yours. Tell us a bit about yourself before we hear about what you've done.
Well, I have to open after your introduction with, as a writer, I collect quotes. And one of my favorites is that 70% of statistics are not true, and only 30% of people know that. And that's a quote from one of the greatest philosophers of our time, Homer Simpson. But very true. But I've been a writer. I'm a travel writer, an adventure travel writer. I've been traveling most of my life. I love to try and get as far away from Western civilization as possible. But as you know, you can trek for days in Asia and still come across a backpackers playing Rambo with a Coke machine. The Amazon is probably the most amazing thing I've done. I canoed the Amazon and trekked the Andes, and you're literally in a bark canoe and staying in villages with no power and no one speaks English, and huts where you have to turn a torch on the night to go to the bathroom. The whole roof's full of tarantulas and every sort of animal. But I think there's more animals in Australia that can kill you even than the Amazon, but there's a lot there in the water.
It begins to sound like somewhere I used to live in Wales, but that's another story. Then I didn't look after the house very well, to be honest. The reality is that you have had near-death experiences on your trips. You nearly wiped yourself out in Thailand, didn't you, on a motorbike?
Yes, I had a motorcycle accident in the middle of nowhere in the jungles of Thailand. Again, just being way too – I was 40 years old pretending I was 14. No helmet, no shoes, going way too fast. But got some air, and I can still see the pothole that I couldn't miss. And that was it. I fractured my skull, my spine, my ankle, my knee, my shoulder, my elbow, broke 3 ribs, perforated my lungs, and had a brain hemorrhage all in the middle of nowhere. Classic Thailand, literally the middle of nowhere, and then people were all around me. My friend who I was with, who was on the bike behind me, he didn't want me to see his face because I was in 4 pieces. But I knew I'd broken my ribs straight away because I could hardly speak, and I just kept saying, "My back, don't touch me." And then there was someone in a uniform. I still to this day don't know whether it was police or security. And he said, okay, ambulance. And they picked me up and put me in the back of a truck. And I spent 40 minutes in the back of a truck in 4 pieces. And crazily enough, my spinal cord didn't break, even though I was going in and out of death at the same time. But most people end up paralyzed, not from a broken spine, but spinal cord, which one specialist explained is like a string of toothpaste. And mine
really?
Didn't break. So, yeah.
Is it that fragile?
That fragile, your spinal cord. Yes.
I was very lucky too then.
Yes.
To break 12 vertebrae and not break the cord. I got a slight numbness in my right leg sometimes, but you know what? That's a small price to pay considering how close to death I was. I didn't fracture my skull, though. I'm really impressed that you were able to get the medical treatment, which I understand was really expensive, $200,000.
Yeah, I have. They took me first to a public hospital. I have flashbacks of something like a Vietnam War movie. And they were bringing me in and out of consciousness, back and forth from death, to be honest. And but I could hardly speak, but just kept saying, insurance, I have insurance. And I ended up, 3 days later, I came out of a coma in a five-star private hospital, which was brand new at that time in Phuket. And I was very lucky, and it was like being in a hotel room with incredible care. And I was in intensive care there for 3 months, which was $200,000, which travel insurance paid for. So I'm a big fan of insurance.
I know the film that you're referring to, Jacob's Ladder.
Yeah.
Quite obviously, that's the one that you're thinking about. It's actually, yeah. If I could only take one film to a desert island, it would be that film. I think it's a tremendous, beautiful film, actually.
That's a little dinner party game I play. You can judge a person by their book collection, their record collection, and their movie selections.
How am I doing? How's my driving?
Very well, very well.
we could talk about After Hours, which is my all-time favorite Scorsese satire as well.
Yes, if
you've seen that, it's a little minor classic actually. but I digress. In terms of your life experience, that didn't really put you off, though, did it? You got back in the saddle quite literally after that.
Yeah, it probably inspired me more than anything. When I came out of coma after 3 days, still with everything broken pretty much from head to toe, all the way down the right side of my body, there was a voice that came to me. It was my voice, but it wasn't me. So whatever you believe, I'm not really a religious person. I believe more in integrity, to be honest, than religion, which a lot of religions don't have, unfortunately. A lot of governments don't have, but a lot of people, if integrity is what you've got to have. But it said, this is going to be the best thing that ever happens to you. And I truly believe, I know that if I'd had a different mantra, a different voice, I've met a lot of people. My recovery was years. It's ongoing. I still have a metal spine, a metal ankle, post-traumatic stress, mild brain damage. So I know that the people with a negative thought pattern, whether that's immediately when something bad happens or ongoing, I've met people who had a lot lesser accidents than me who are still on painkillers and complaining about life, whereas I've certainly chosen to do the total opposite of that.
So it seems you're certainly not living life like it's a practice for the next time.
No.
Though you nearly got to the next time through that philosophy.
Yes, definitely. I was going down a tunnel. My upbringing, I left Australia as a private schoolboy rugby player and then ended up coming back a gem-dealing gypsy. So it was a total transformation of life. But when I was in that, on the way to that hospital being brought back and forth, it was like I was running onto a rugby tunnel where there's people either side of me sort of saying goodbye, friends and family, and then they'd bring me back to life again and then back and forth and back and forth. So, yeah, that was my pearly gates. It is the game they play in heaven.
Yeah, I was going to say, now we've got Heaven Can Wait and A Matter of Life and Death thrown in there as well. I didn't think I was getting a film critic. I just thought I was getting a risk-attracted adventurer. But there we go.
A little bit of Invictus, perhaps.
Oh, a little bit of Invictus, yes, indeed. It's almost Promethean. I actually felt that Ridley Scott overdid it in Prometheus, but that's another story.
He tends to do that at times.
If I was Ridley Scott, I'd probably overdo it too. Yeah, he's got the right.
I think so. I think we all would.
So you're still traveling.
Yes.
I do. I've got a motorbike as well, and I ride, but I'm increasingly aware of thinking, it's raining, or it's cold. Well, I don't want to do 200 miles because I won't be able to hear anything when I take my helmet off at the other end. I want to go into this in detail in the next section, but if you were to summarize in one sentence, I want to talk about the nature of risk and the state in the next section. What attracts you to risk? Are you attracted to risk, or is it the waste product of what you want to do?
I think both in my personal life and my professional life, because I've always everything in life is about risk and return. So everything I do is a calculated risk, whether that's my previously in Byron Bay, where I am now, my town, I owned a nightclub and then a real estate agency. So I joke that I know everyone and all their dirty secrets. But both of those career paths, as well as now my book series, have risks involved in them, but it's a matter of always looking at that risk and return and making calculated risks. And then obviously you make mistakes and you know, riding a motorbike too fast with no helmet at that time in my life, which was the global financial crisis. I'd pretty much lost everything. So it was a little bit of a surge then of adrenaline that was probably not as controlled as it could be. And certainly now it took me a long time to get back on a bike, but I'm very controlled in that regard. And I've recently just been to Africa, and it was funny that, again, I always like to try different things, a bit like I notice you do, whether it's wrestling or stand-up comedy. But I was paragliding off Cape Town, off Table Mountain there, which is incredible. And in Africa, it's quite funny because you sign waivers everywhere that pretty much says all care, no responsibility. If you get eaten by a lion, that's on you. And even when I was about to jump off a mountain with these guys, I'm filling out the forms and I went to reach for my passport to put my passport number. And they said, don't worry, just put any number. And I'm like, great, I'm about to jump off a mountain with you guys. So sometimes, again, it's about risk and return, but you've got to weigh it up. And sometimes in that moment, then it's a yes or no.
Well, it's a risk having you on the show, but the return is fantastic. Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere, Matt. We're talking to Matt Towner, who is in some ways a role model for people who sit at home playing Minecraft. I'm thinking of my six-year-old at the moment. This is Lembotopic on the Lembotopic Show on today's News Talk TNT. We'll see you in a minute.
TNT's State of the Nation.
Kicked off diverse, young, working-class voters. Let's start with that class.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, this is something I think people have been picking up on, obviously, through the Republican Party and since 2016. But how I kind of like to frame this is that you often hear people say, hey, what the swing voter is now is the suburban white woman. And I think Trump changed all of that. Obviously, in 2016, him winning the Rust Belt kind of showed a lot of people, hey, there's a different way to 270 than what is traditional for a Republican. And so when we looked at 2016 compared to 2020, and then what we're seeing now with voters, we've noticed this group. It's mostly men, but it's working class, blue collar voters under the age of 40. And these are people earning under $100,000, for the most case, earning under 75. And what we're seeing is they're highly dissatisfied with both parties. I'm not saying that these are people who love Donald Trump, but what they're seeing is people who are depressed with the state of the country right now, with the state of the economy, and with the state of their own lives.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country's all about.
Today's news talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the voice of freedom. If I say so myself, it's Lembit Opik right here in today's news talk, TNT, and the voice of risk, Matt Towner, who broke himself into four pieces in Thailand, and all four pieces got glued back together again in a 5-star hospital stroke hotel. You know what? If it was only $200,000 for a 5-star hotel in Thailand, that was pretty good value, even if you hadn't been hurt.
Well, it was quite funny because when I came to, even on the bedside table, and that's why they have such good care in Thailand. Not only do they have so many motorcycle accidents, so they have some of the best orthopedic surgeons in the world, but a lot of these big new hospitals are built for cosmetic surgery. So there was a menu for boob jobs and tummy tucks and all of that sort of stuff. I was there obviously to save my life, but sometimes I wish they'd done the tummy tuck as well.
Oh, I wondered what you're going to go for there. But of course, you didn't go for any of that because it wasn't covered by the insurance.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, they're added extras. or I think they probably do takeaways as well.
That's a fancy word for a tummy tuck. I've been to Byron Bay, where you live, by the way, and I sort of expected to see the in-betweeners, which were some kids, you know, from here. And I sort of stood there trying to imagine what it must have been like for the great explorers hundreds of years ago to turn up. They must have been really surprised by all the pubs.
yeah, definitely Australia. Well, that's basically how the English colonized Australia. It was through rum, really. But the indigenous people, Byron Bay is a meeting place. They never actually lived here. And it has, you know, as hippie trippy as it sounds, and I've been here since it was a hippie trippy sound town. And then it became a backpacker tourist town, and quite famously. And then now it's Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. So I've lived through all of those incarnations. But I've always been coming and going as the indigenous people believe this place is for and about. And I often say that if you stay here too long, you end up one of those people writing letters to the editor every week and complaining about everything, which we do have a lot of those people. God love them. But once you go away again, then you come back, you're like, oh, this place is beautiful, because it really is. We've got some of the best beaches in the world. And then within 10 minutes drive, we're in rainforests and waterfalls.
Yeah, well,
with clubs in between.
Well, it's mainly pubs. They're punctuated by rainforest. I actually did a show called "I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here" in rainforest south of Brisbane, and there is indeed a rainforest, and it really isn't a real rainforest, and there were real animals, and it nearly got bitten by a real small-eyed brown snake, I think it was, in the middle of the night, but I didn't. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking to you now. I'm very fond of Australia, actually. Really interesting. It's a place where I filled up a car, because I was told anytime you go past a garage, if you're driving in the outback, you should fill up your car. I filled up the car, and the next time I got to a garage, I had only 30 miles left in the tank. It's just a stunningly big place.
Yeah.
And they've got these upside down. Obviously, there aren't any police on the big, long, straight bits through the desert. But you've got these upside down kangaroos dead. And you think, well, if one of those hit me, that starts slowing you down as well. But returning to the risk and so forth, I've got a motorbike, a Honda VFR 750. What do you ride usually? I bet you it's a Temere.
No, 250 trail bikes. I've never really been before. That's always been my thing, dirt bikes. I've never been bigger than that. But, yeah, that's the thing. I learned the hard way that you can kill yourself on one of those. You think, I always just had a few little scrapes and scratches. But, you've got to be very careful on a motorbike and know what you're doing.
You do. It's not the bike that kills you. It's your attitude that kills you on the whole. Sure. And you have to be very defensive. But I want to talk to you about the philosophy of this. I would say that I don't set out to find risk. I've got a pilot's license as well, motorbike, ride bike, and that sort of thing. But it's a waste product of the things I find interesting. But I got this theory that each of us has something like called a risk quotient. There's a certain amount of risk we need. It's a bit like a vitamin, and if you don't get it one way, you'll get it in a different way. So when we try to shut somebody down who wants 8 units of risk, they'll find those 8 units somehow, whether it's legal or not. And so it's a council of fools who thinks that the government can stop us taking risks. Other people are very risk averse. They go on to be accountants or whatever. Other people are very risk attracted and they go on into cave diving. I wonder what you think. Do you think that you're hardwired to accept a certain level of risk?
Very much so. I don't have children myself. I'm the godfather of 9. I'm the uncle of 6. But I believe in my life experience now, in 55 years of observing life and people, which I do a lot, that you're going to be who you're going to be. I think, you know, there's nature versus nurture debates, there's education, there's all sorts of things. But if you're a person who wants or feels the need to take risks, exactly, it's very hard to suppress that. And I saw one of your other podcasts about the war on drugs, which is a total waste of time and money, because, again, in my book series, I talk about when I was growing up in Australia, there are guys who would drink rum and fight. If you drink rum and fight, don't drink rum. If you take drugs and you lose everything and ruin your life, then don't do it. But if you try to control people too much, they're going to try, if they've got that personality. I think it's working out who you are as soon as you can in life, and then working out to channel that adrenaline or the risk or the risk aversion, whatever that may be, whoever you are. You know, I have an eccentric personality. I find everything funny. A lot of people don't find that funny. Funny that. And the only normal people I want in my life are my accountant and my lawyer. That's who I see as normal. And it's very important to have those as normal people. But they help me to take the risks I take in my life, in my business, in my travel.
One small criticism. You used funny three times in the same sentence. That was terrible grammar. That's yes. Totally unacceptable, Matt.
Anyway. Well, my publishers say that they like this raw approach that I have, and that's now I encourage other people to be send in their stories and become a writer, whether you're Harvard educated or not.
Let's advertise your book. I'm not sure if you've got a picture of Matt's book. Can we put it on the screen, please? Tell us about your book and what it's called.
I called my series Travel Tales, Adventure Travel Stories with a Sense of Humor. And then the international publishers picked it up and then they pretty much take over. So they called the first one Abroad, Broke and Busted. then the second one, even more controversially, Crazy in Asia. Which there's no swearing even in the books. My mother never swore in her life. But at the time, the New York Times bestseller was The Subtle Art of Not Giving Whatever. And so they thought it would be very controversial to go with that. And of course, the mirror ball and the whole thing. So when I got picked up by an international publisher, I encouraged a lot of my friends who I knew also had incredible stories, as we all do, like you do. And so there are 30 different stories by 15 different authors, adventure travel stories with a sense of humor. No matter how dark a situation gets, I like to have some sort of twist that you can find something comical, because I do think a sense of humor gets you through the hardest of times. And a positive attitude is sometimes better than any medicine. So there's sort of that sort of link in every story, whether someone's confronted by a grizzly bear or someone ends up nearly dead like me. Some people end up in love. Some people have ended up in jail and found their way out. So every story is totally different. They're all short stories. So you can pick up a story and put it down. It's not somewhere, a book that you have to remember where you're up to.
In love, in jail, in Thailand, I've ended up insolvent. But there we go.
That was her name.
Oh, very good. Yes, indeed. We just about get away with that, I think. I started writing my biography, and when I reread it, even I couldn't really believe it. So I haven't published it yet. So it's like my own unauthorized autobiography, but I'll come back to it at some point. So you're obviously quite clearly a writer, and you clearly have a joie de vivre, as joy of life. But no children. What do you think is your credo? What's your narrative? If you had to say your reason for existence, what is it?
Oh, that's a very good question. I certainly think I'm more of a storyteller than a writer. I'm still my own worst critic. I have a film degree that I never really used because I couldn't do the starving artist thing. So as any art, it's hard work. It's a labor of love. And a writer especially is the loneliest profession because you can talk about writing all you want. You've got to sit down and do it. But now that, you know, we were in airport bookshops all over the world before COVID, unfortunately, we sold 3,000 copies and immediately, and it was all going gangbusters. And then, of course, COVID shut all the airport bookshops down, nearly crippled and nearly bankrupted the publishers. And now I've got 3,000 books in my garage, which they're a great business card. But now that's why I was at the London Book Fair to try and relaunch everything again now. But I'm really seeing it more now as a TV series of short films. So, again, the same thing, I encourage people to send their stories and look at a way of self-perpetuating that series of all of these great stories that then could go not only the reader becomes the writer, then becomes the filmmaker. And somewhere across between Banged Up Abroad and Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. That's an interesting. That's fascinating. Not so much Road to Rio then. No, I'll be your Bob Hope.
We all need a Bob Hope.
he died a happy man as well. Definitely. One of two great giants of comedy and so on. So with all of that, then returning to the philosophical question,
yes,
how do you feel? I personally feel, my opinion, that we're now living in an increasingly authoritarian society where the state uses tech to control us rather than to empower us.
Yes.
And you get people in politics who almost, I don't know why exactly, maybe through some corrosive lack of self-belief, feel that they have to control us.
Yes.
In order to validate themselves. Where do you think our society is going in terms of liberty?
Oh, well, I had an interesting experience. I've just been to the London Book Fair to pitch my book series to relaunch. And, you know, I thought I knew every scam in the book. You know, I was a gem dealer in Bangkok in the days where sapphire shops would open and close every night because literally they weren't selling sapphires. So when people realized that, they'd go back. There was no jewelry shop there anymore. They just kept moving. A great scam. But I was in London. I went outside of the fair to a cafe, and I noticed this has happened to you as well. I was sitting with another writer, and we were having a coffee and a croissant, and over my shoulder, this woman appeared very briefly with a COVID mask on, speaking in a foreign language with something in her hand, and I thought it must be a waitress with a menu.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was all that just happened so quickly. And the other writer thought it was a homeless person because she kept pointing at the croissant. So she gave her the croissant, even though we were in the cafe. We weren't out on the street tables. And then as soon as she was gone, it all happened so quickly, I realized my phone was gone.
That's happened to
apparently
me.
Apparently the oldest trick in the book. And if I had noticed and grabbed her hand, there was a guy right there by the door, a big guy we found on CCTV after, who would have just whacked me over the head. Yeah. So I went to the police. They told me in London a phone gets stolen every 30 seconds. Yeah. It's such a thing. And they said, you know, someone said, oh, don't you have Find My iPhone? They said, you don't want to be chasing those sort of people. So it was really interesting that it was the art of deception, all of that, the chaos they created, the fact that they were so brazen. So it's a story that I'm now writing, but the story is bigger than that because in my phone wallet was all my credit cards, you know, my life in that phone, which is the way we've now been, you know, everything's in your phone. To try from overseas to then report a phone stolen and then credit card stolen, block all of that stuff, and go through these recorded phone systems that you're talking to a robot, not a person, no matter how much they sound, even that they're telling me they're sending a code to my phone. I don't have my phone and I'm trying to report cards stolen. And this is now weeks later. I'm even back in Australia trying to reinstate everything from all of the things that are connected. You realize even now I go into a branch or a government office and after I've been waiting on the phone for over an hour going through these robotic things, and then they try to send you home again to use the app. It's like, where are we going? What are we doing? I'm in your office right now. I'm here right now. And yet the banks are trying to send you away to use an app. The driver's license to renew is everything's getting so digitalized. And I do worry, especially this cashless society that's being talked about, then the fees and charges that they keep doing on that, as well as keep you on hold or using an app, is just going to get out of control.
I had a doctor's appointment a couple of days ago, fairly routine thing. So I went up to I kept the day free. I went up to the surgery 10 minutes early. They said, oh, it's a phone interview. I said, well, can I just stay? They went, no. I said, but it's about this. It's about my body. It's not a virtual debate. They said, no, just do it on the phone. And made me go away. They made me go away. Very nice doctor. But I was thinking, why can't you just see me?
Yeah.
Just see if I look ill to you, you know, but that is a concern. And you've touched on my concern about liberty. Yeah. Once you can see everything electronically, you can control everything electronically.
Yes.
For example, you could have a situation where it says, sorry, Matt, you've had two steaks this month already, so you won't be able to buy a third. Yeah. Or sorry, Matt, you've had a really bad motorbike accident, so we won't pay for you to fill up your bike with fuel.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a poster the other day for a local business that's encouraging people to use cash because of the amount of fees and charges they get from everybody tapping in a day is enough for them to pay a staff member. Right. And that's already. So once that gets more and more and fees and charges start, they've got a captive audience to increase fees. As we all know, bank profits continue to soar. But yeah, this data matching, you know, my background in real estate, I know for a fact, you know, we have a real estate cycle. Every 10 years, there are three boom years, and then there are seven hard years. That's pretty much historically how real estate works because it's not an exact science. Property is only worth what someone's prepared to pay or can afford to pay. But then banks obviously do the same, and they actually are now looking through people so thoroughly because they don't want to be lending money like they 5 years ago. They'd lend you tons of money. Now they're very tight. So if you should never buy alcohol on cards, because as it shows up, they'll start looking at your alcohol spending. I've even heard of people being denied because they didn't put on the application that they have pets, and they see the amount of money they spend on pet products. So,
really?
Yes. So that's literally factual information about how banks are looking at denying loan applications. Because they go through cycles as to wanting to lend money and then not wanting to lend money, and they have access to those records.
So they're already using our purchasing habits to judge our risk.
100%.
This is shocking.
Yeah.
That's just awful.
Yeah.
On that bombshell, stay with me. I need to recover from that. I'm thinking about all the stuff I've been buying. I said, it was a mistake. Somebody stole my card. It wasn't me. I wasn't there. I've never seen that woman before in my life. We'll come back to you in a minute, Matt Tanner. I've got to make some urgent phone calls. This is Lenny Topic on the Lenny Topic Show on Today's News Talk. I'll see you in a minute.
It's been said that when someone you love has Parkinson's, you have Parkinson's. The truth is, Parkinson's disease doesn't just affect the diagnosed. It affects everyone who supports and helps care for them. Worldwide, over 10 million people are living with Parkinson's, a neurological disease that affects movement. And with so many places to search for information, it can be difficult to know where to begin. The Parkinson's Foundation has answers. Answers for everyone in the fight. We can help you understand the disease, help you find expert care, give you tips for living a better life, share the latest research, help you find local support, and there's a free helpline you can call. Find your answers and join us in the fight against Parkinson's. To learn more, please go to parkinson.org or call 1-800-4PD-INFO. The Parkinson's Foundation. Better lives together.
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is him. Every day he's hungry for something. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then it kind of starts to work itself out.
You're listening to Lembit Opic on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembit Opic Show. Coming up in the next hour, we have a self-styled comedian. I say that because I'm always a bit jealous when somebody can make money out of it, because I couldn't, not properly. That will be Danny Postel, who's going to join me. And he's an impersonator too. Has been on one of the reality TV shows, Britain's Got Talent, I think. So I would be excluded automatically from a show like that. Some of the comments that I'm getting here before we go back to my guest. Alex says, Holly, spasibo. I'm just coming into this halfway through. I was born in Australia. My parents were born in China. So two generations of my family escaped from commie oppression. Thank goodness I'm in Australia, says Alex. Obviously, there's been a long chat going on there. Holly says, mind you, Russia could be the last bastion of free space soon. No, this is where we go with these discussions, Matt. This is a really free-thinking thing. No doubt, if MI5 and the CIA are following our chat, there are a lot of people are going to be a lot of trouble for this as well.
Well, hopefully they're having a laugh as well.
I hope so. You haven't met these people, have you? They're only laughing when the military industrial complex is at full tilt. Alex says, I love TNT, and not just because I'm on it. That's a bloody great station. Oh, good for you, Alex. Well, you're on it even more now. Keep doing that. Plattery gets you everywhere. And Chris says, has Rumble taken over TNT, trying to go back? USUNT bar not working properly. Hope I didn't read something really rude there. It's a generation thing. Alex says, cash is king. And no doubt in your case, queen to Holly. It's spies everywhere, says Holly. Alex agrees. You've kicked off a long conversation here, Matt, with your slightly paranoid commentary.
I tend to do that.
Yeah, it does worry me, though. A paranoid friend of mine said he went home last night and everything he owned had been stolen and replaced with an exact replica. Not mine.
No, well, the funniest, best T-shirt I've ever seen at a festival is all these paranoid people are following me.
Very good. Why should you never give, this is not directly relevant, why should you never tell a pun to a kleptomaniac? Because they take everything literally. It's complex. It's a complex thing. It's complicated. Let's go back to talking about you, though. I only got 15 minutes. I'm going so fast. So we've talked about the fact that already banks are profiling us based on our expenditure, which was a very strong argument for using cash. No doubt about that. But what about the state? Are you concerned? I don't want to put words in your mouth because I obviously am concerned about this. I mean, this really does bug me. But how concerned are you that we're going to give our freedom away to computer says no culture?
Well, I think Australia, sadly, is one of the most overregulated countries in the world already. And that was certainly proven during the COVID lockdowns, and certainly is continuing to in industries that I'm involved in, whether it's the building industry or in the writing game. And I think, more and more there is all of this regulations and data matching and the this whole push towards don't talk to a person, use the app. And then everything is recorded in terms of both people's information and then also their habits, whether that be spending or otherwise. And
I'm with you on this. Some things that really annoy me in life, Matt, one is your call is important to us. No, it's not. Otherwise, you'd answer it.
Totally.
Then the other one on the train station. I am sorry that the 1420 to Birmingham has been delayed. No, you're not. You're not even an AI. You're just a recording. You're not conscious. You're not sorry. And it's just so fatuous.
Oh, totally. That was a hilarious thing. The fact to have lost my phone overseas and keep having these recorded messages saying they're sending me a code, it's not a person. And I just want to talk to a person. And then sometimes I'm just cut out on you. But my record, because I've had to do a lot of this since I got back, I sat on the phone with an insurance company for 2 hours and 38 minutes, which again is both a ploy because most people give up, but I never give up. That's what insurance is for. I pay my insurance and I'm going to sit and wait. So 2 hours and 38 minutes. But even in other things that I've waited, most of the things, whether it's a bank or a government department, you're waiting on all these recorded things that are taking you round and round in circles, or then even people taking you to other departments. But if it's taking that long for people to answer phones, then why do we have unemployment if there are government departments and multi-billion dollar companies that can't have enough people to answer a phone within an hour when someone needs them?
And the answer simply is that our phone call isn't important to them.
No.
And that they're not sorry for keeping us waiting, because frankly, it's cheaper for them, because essentially they're going to say, you need us. What are you going to do? You're going to wait, or you're going to clear off because it costs us money to talk to you in the first place, because you're probably only going to make a claim or a complaint.
That's right.
I call British Airways.
You go into the office, they send you home to do the same thing again. I'm surprised even doctor's surgeries are starting to do that now. Wow.
I call airlines. I travel a lot. I call airlines quite a lot. And three or four times in, they usually give you what you want. My requests are always reasonable, but length of time it takes to get them fixed tends to be unreasonable. Now, in terms of the future, we're on the cusp of a situation where computers are generating computers now, and there's this endless talk about AI and whether it's conscious or not. It seems to me that's less important than the extent to which we're willing to delegate authority to algorithms. And it could be, for example, that with your living in Byron Bay, hippie town, with your accident in Thailand, your willingness to be a motorcyclist, and the fact that you use naughty words on book covers, you'd be pretty high risk. And one way we could stop you doing stuff is saying no insurance, and then bring in a law saying without insurance you're not allowed to do a certain thing. I worry that we're at the point now where the the state thinks that it knows what's best. And even if it makes our lives miserable, it thinks it's best for us to live a miserable life as long as it's a long life. How do you balance risk and freedom?
Yeah, a very, very good question. I'm pretty much an expert at saying yes, sir, no, sir, and then doing whatever I want. So I definitely create my own freedoms. That is getting harder and harder. And that is why I still love traveling to different countries. When I come back to Australia, especially in Byron Bay, it is a paradise here and everything is very easy. If something goes wrong, I can pick up a phone. I might have to sit on hold for 2 hours, 38 minutes or more, but I can get things done. But I know my personality. Within 3 months, I'm bored out of my brain. I want to go to a third world country that's full of adventure and excitement, and it's like being a pirate on the land again. And there you have very few rules and regulations and very little IT, and a lot of things are done with a brown paper bag, even property developments, let alone anything else. So I sort of come and go between those two worlds. So it is interesting to see what we call the third world. Are they more advanced when there's still a lot of villagers having a very beautiful, simple life?
I've been watching a series called Narcos, or yes. Narcos, depending on how you pronounce it, about Pablo Escobar and then something called the Cali Cartel. And a controversial comment coming up, and it's an opinion. I see the billions upon billions that can be made in the cocaine trade. And then I say to myself, why is it illegal? Why don't we legalize it all, regulate it like we do with alcohol, which is a pretty potent class A drug, really.
Sure.
And then accept that you're not going to stop whoever's using cocaine using cocaine, but you can actually legitimize these highly competent business people who've made an entire market in contraband. And so we get to a situation where the authoritarian state thinks it can ban something. It can ban an addiction or a penchant for a particular drug, and then will not do it. But instead, it creates a complete black market in it. Why have we got to this stage? Maybe you disagree, but I would legalize all drugs and regulate them.
Oh, I agree entirely. And if you look, there are some great films, and a lot of them based on a lot of fact, that there have been a lot of governments, especially, in, you know, Pablo Escobar is a perfect example. The man was, he was an incredible, as an entrepreneur, you know, fourth richest man in the world at one stage, but on the run. And at the time, if you crossed him, he would kill you. So he was bipolar is an understatement. As my doctor mate says, one of the writers in my book series, we're all bipolar until proven otherwise. But he was extreme. But he dealt with a lot of governments, and a lot of governments made a lot of money from what he was doing. When you watch that series, which was very well done as a series, once they did cut the head off the snake, now they're dealing with so many other problems with Mexican cartels who are probably as ruthless or not worse, whereas they were just dealing with him. He was the chairman of the board in that industry. And there are a lot of other industries, you know, obviously, whether you draw the line at methamphetamines and things that are probably even more harmful to people. But again, if there are very functioning addicts of all kinds, and not just drugs, there's so many other addictions that people have. And I would care to say that everyone's probably got one, even if it's just caffeine. So it's working out how to use that. And there are a lot of functioning addicts of all sorts. So, yes, working out how to tax anything to and make it healthier and more, because it's forcing anything underground makes it a bigger problem in more ways than one.
And there was a country. Here's a test for you, Matt. Sure. I know you will know the name of the country. That's all. The only clue I'll give you. There was a country with roughly the same population as the United Kingdom, which provided methadone and heroin on prescription to recorded addicts, and it had 2,200. Recorded addicts in the whole country, a population of about 55, 60 million. Guess what country that was?
Well, I know that Portugal has been very forward in their thinking. And obviously before that, Holland was.
Denmark? Neither of those.
Hmm.
Here it is. United Kingdom. The UK until 1973 took that progressive approach. Then they introduced the Misuse of Drugs Act, and now we've got something like 200,000 addicts. Brilliant. Nice work. 100 times more addicts. They actually stopped measuring it around 1995 when there were 36,000. Absolute clear prima facie statistical evidence that when you start limiting people's freedom, you get the opposite effect and you create a black market because suddenly there's a big motivation.
And that creates many more problems. I've always said in all of my travels, I've been traveling now for 35 years all over the world. I've been to a lot more dangerous countries than the UK. And even in America, there are places that you just don't go. But in London particularly, you can have stuff go wrong anywhere at any time. And it really, I've never had a phone stolen in all my life. It happened so quickly and so well done. And the fact a phone stolen every 30 seconds, that I've only had a knife pulled on me once in my life in London. London it's a very interesting place, but I find that it's a dangerous place. And a lot of that is because it's very expensive. And so I understand if people... It's hard enough to make a living, and certainly if you've got an addiction, it can be even harder, and people then resort to all sorts of things. So it's this triple-down effect of all of these issues that we're discussing.
Yeah, I had phones stolen twice in 4 months within half a kilometre of Trafalgar Square in both times, and one of the times I was standing outside a police station, which at least made reporting convenient.
Yeah. But when I saw that interview that you said, the police pretty much just said, well, there's not much that we can do.
I traced the phone until it got switched off. Yep. And for the very much the same reason you said, I wasn't going to go up to North London to get it.
Yeah.
Because I felt that I was maybe going to get stabbed the first time I was.
Well, that's what the police said to me. People have been stabbed for their phones. Yeah.
And it's just not worth it. It really isn't. Mm. But this is the irony again. Britain, which is becoming an increasingly authoritarian state, has runaway crime in London. And we've got a mayor who said he was going to come in and deal with knife crime. Knife crime's terrible in London. The crime is terrible in London. I've never in my life been robbed twice of my phone in 4 months. Never. Yeah. But, I mean, it's a lawless example of why authoritarianism doesn't work. If you were, let's say, make you ruler of the world, so if you're in charge of the world, Economic Forum.
Yeah.
what would you do to give us our freedom back?
Oh, wow, that would be an interesting world, being a traveling hedonistic Aquarian eccentric. It would be a very interesting world. God, that's such a big question. I can't believe you'll say me. That's the.
I didn't know I was going to ask it. It just comes to my mind now. Yeah. This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius, after all.
It is, it is. Well, you know, sometimes I do have these moments, and I've had one again recently with all of this that's been going on, that I do just want to run away. I always joke that if I go missing, there'll be a little bar somewhere on a beach with a thatched roof and a bunch of little bungalows and just me and Tom Cruise flipping cocktails, another movie reference. But that little paradise where there would be no phones, no Wi-Fi, no nothing, wouldn't even advertise, but people would want to find our little utopia that would be going back in time and just getting back to the epiphany I had recently is your only responsibility in life is to be happy. And if you're not happy, don't blame anyone else, because everything from divorce to world war is because someone's unhappy and they're blaming someone else. So that would be my world.
Wise words. You've got to come to the UK soon. I want to compare notes off air.
Yes.
Because there's lots we can't talk about on air. Sure. I'll tell you what I see in you is somebody who is inspirationally committed to swimming up the river. And that is a good thing, instead of just traveling with the flow to the inevitable destination that meets us all in the end. On a minus five to plus five scale, what would you give life so far?
Oh, definitely 10 out of 10. It's the best time of your life every day. Every moment of every day. It's the best time of your life. That's it right there.
I'm going to come back to Byron Bay. I'll write a complaint to the council about all the noise, and then we can go and have a drink as well. It's a real, real pleasure to meet you, Matt. And it's just, I wanted to have a good guest, but instead I've had the best. Matt Towner, a bow. That is Matt Towner from Byron Bay. I recommend Matt and I recommend Byron Bay as well. Coming up next, we've got more news and comment in the next couple of hours. Do let me know. I'll read out some of your messages. I got very engrossed in my chat with Matt there, so sorry. I took my eye off the chat ball. I'll come up. I'll follow all that up later. It's all your fault, Matt. I've ignored my people. I'll go back to them in just a minute. Matt's going to get on with his evening. I'm going to get on with the show. But don't go anywhere. Do get involved in the chat. Tell me what you think about Matt's mindset. How much risk is enough risk? How much does the state stop us from taking risks? All of that with me, Len Bitopek, on the Len Bitopek Show right here on Today's News Talk. I'll see you in a few minutes.